live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Trumpet.
Power panel, Jake Huger, John Iderola, Ray Vaughna. Okay, you know Ray Vaughna, one Twitch pitch. He's got a show on the network on Twitch now. Ray Vaughna, good to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Okay, now lots of stories. I hear that John Iderola does news. Let's go over there and see what happens.
Oh, geez, we're just jumping in. Okay, well, let's do that.
Boom.
Let's have for what passes for fun in American politics. Okay. Oh, God, his face. So you're probably familiar with Mike Lindell from his pillows, I imagine, but also his radical politics. And at least as of right now, he's a big money guy on the right. Very soon, his entire fortune will probably be owned by Dominion and Smartmatic. But for right now, he's got a lot of money that he's giving to Republican causes. But how did he go from a guy who sells pillows online to someone who's tied in with Donald Trump and legal challenges to the election and Newsmax and all of that? Well, right now at 2IT.com, we've got a great write-up of some of the ways that he got radicalized. And it all really has to do, Jonathan Larson did some amazing researching in this, and we're only going to skim the surface of a complex story. It has to do with a shadowy group known as the Fellowship Foundation, or the Family, which Jonathan Larson has done great reporting on for a number of years. And so we're gonna give you details as to how the Family brought Lindell into right-wing politics. And there's a lot of interesting information here. But as we go through this, one of the reasons I think this is so important is that the Family and right-wing politics, you can sort of get the Christian, Christianity on right-wing politics is a long-standing thing. But this is something that has drawn in a lot of Democratic politicians as well, including people like Barack Obama. Their yearly events, that's a thing that Democrats go to as well. So understand that as we're talking about how they created the monster that is Mike Lindell. So what we basically have is the 2016 National Prayer Breakfast. So that's one of their yearly events. And Mike Lindell ended up going to this particular instance of it. So how did he end up getting invited? Well, when you ask him, he says, I was invited at the last minute by my friend Stephen Baldwin. You know, as happens, I guess. But apparently it wasn't really, there you go. So is he actually to blame though, Stephen Baldwin? Well, not necessarily. So Stephen Baldwin has his own ministry called the Stephen Baldwin Ministry, which sort of makes sense. And there's an individual named Wilfred Job who runs that particular ministry. And it appears that it's actually him, Wilfred Job, who has close ties with the Family himself, who invited Mike Lindell to the 2016 National Prayer Breakfast. Now, the interesting thing about that is, what does it matter necessarily? Well, I don't know, but it sure seems to matter to Lindell, because when you ask him about, for instance, about Wilfred Job, he says, I don't know who you're talking about. Which is fine, except that Job is actually listed as the president of the Lindell Foundation in 2017. And when you ask Mike Lindell about that, he says, go to jail. Go somewhere and find yourself a nice jail cell, because that's where you're gonna end up. Goodbye. Which is a strong reaction when you ask him about a guy he claims not to know about. But anyway, look, we're gonna get into a lot more. How he gets there is just the beginning of the story. But I did wanna give our panelists a chance to jump in and talk a little bit about Mike Lindell, because he has become so important, not only for his election challenges, but all of the, the wannabe Fox Newses are desperately trying to get him to do advertising for them.
Yeah, so this story has lots of twists and turns, and it's in a really interesting roller coaster ride, because in a sense, you begin to develop some sympathy for Mike Lindell, which, or at least I did, and John disagrees, because he looks like he's kind of as deranged as he is, there's a certain innocence to him, and he seems like he's getting led around by the nose by this Family. And and in comical ways, of which we're gonna get to in a minute, okay? And the fact that he can't see it is amazing to me. And they're using him for their own purposes. Again, we'll get to the heart of that in a sec. But when you look at the Job situation, you get the deranged part of Mike Lindell. So the guy runs your foundation. If somebody said to me, hey, here's Jim Jablowski, and it turns out he ran your foundation in 2017. And I said, wow, I don't know Jim Jablowski. I wouldn't then follow up with, oh yeah, you're going to jail. But I don't even know Jim Jablowski. I don't know what he did. I don't know if it was right. I don't know if it was wrong. Why would you go to jail for a guy? But his immediate reaction is, that's it, I hate you, you're going to jail. I've got all my people lined up. And maybe these kind of folks got him thinking, hey, we're connected to all the powerful people in the world. Trump, Obama, right now one of the leading Democrats that's involved in the family is Chris Coons. That's Joe Biden, one of Joe Biden's top advisors, senator from Delaware, one of his top friends, one of his chairs of his campaign in 2020. So when you're connected to guys that powerful, you might think I could send people to jail for even asking me a question. Mm-hmm. And so he also called Jonathan, our reporter, a lying scumbag because,
right? I could sort of see it.
But the Ben Carson's coming into this story. But guys, one more thing before John goes back to explaining more and get Rayvon in here is that this story is super interesting because it's kind of opens the curtain, lets you see how the right wing puts things together and how they get money men like Lindell. And why are they interested in Lindell? Because they love pillows? No, they want his money, Lebowski. That's what this is about, right? But it's also a little bit different because most of the money guys in the right wing have actually their own purposes. They're fracking guys or they're, you know, toilet paper people like the Coke Industries, etc. And big toilet paper has its own agenda. They want tax cuts. And then when they give to Shapiro and Prager, they have a very well-defined agenda and they know they're purchasing propaganda. In Lindell's case, a big pillow doesn't need any of this, okay? He just kind of seems to get suckered into all of this. Read it for yourself because it's an amazing read. But that's what I want you to keep in mind as John's telling you this story. But Rayvana, any quick thoughts here?
Yeah, I just would like to say that I side with John and I do not have sympathy for Mike Pillow at all, even reading this story. But it does really show the way that organizations like the family use figures like Lindell sort of as useful idiots, like puppets to further their very unpopular agendas so that they can sort of cloak themselves and shield themselves from any of the blame or the blowback from it. And the Democratic participation in the system, or the participation of Democrats in the Democratic Party, is disgusting. I know we'll get into that a little bit more later.
Yeah, yeah, that's really where it's not understandable. I get that this group is gonna try to get right-wing politicians to give them what they want. The idea that Democrats would be a party to it literally at all well, I'm not gonna say it makes no sense. It makes no sense to me. Clearly to them, their interests seem to overlap. But okay, let's talk a little bit more about Lindell and his time at the 2016 prayer meeting. And whether this is a demonstration of him being a useful idiot, very useful, very idiotic, or maybe this will lead you to have a bit more sympathy for him, Cenk. So he at one point gets taken to a breakout session with Ben Carson, who's running for president at this point. He's brought into the breakout session by Larry Ross, who is the family's spokesperson and a key leader. So what, did they bring him to hang out with Ben Carson, a guy they were hoping would be president because they want to have a great conversation about pillows? No, he's like trying to set up Carson with a potential donor. But Lindell says he heard a prophecy in the room. He says, and I really, really wish at this point that I had a Lindell impression, but alas, I don't. In that room, we were praying. A guy in there prophesied in there. He said, two of you in this room are gonna become great friends and change the course of history. And Ben and I are great friends. And he said, and I'm sitting there though, as they're praying and he's saying that, I go, if one of them's me, who would the other be? And this things started happening to me.
Oh. No, but that's a
grown adult.
I know, but John, that's exactly what I'm talking about. He has this almost childlike innocence. When they bring him into the room, they say, oh, we did a random group of people from the prayer breakfast gathering, right? random group, Ben Carson, Stephen Baldwin, Mike Lindell, who's incredibly rich.
That seems pretty random to me.
And one of the leaders of the family. Mm-hmm. You schmuck, that's obviously not random. Again, if you bring in one of the Koch brothers and he's a sophisticated actor and he goes, oh, okay, I get it. You guys are pitching me something. That's fine. Okay, pitch away. And maybe I like it, maybe I don't, right? But this guy has no idea. He's like, oh, what an amazing coincidence. My daughter is 8 years old. And whenever she sees a coincidence, she thinks we're Barbies and that someone is playing with us. Okay. And she goes, oh, we're Barbies, right?
She figured out simulation theory.
Yeah, exactly, right? And Lindell is a grown ass man, runs a large company. He's like, oh my God, we're Barbies. Like, what a coincidence. We all happen to be in the same room. Yeah. Oh my God, two of us are going to change the course of history. I wonder if it's me and the guy I need to give all my money to.
The bar is so low, like to impress him, like one of you will be hungry. And like his stomach rumbles and he's like, I'm going to give someone every dollar I have. No, but anyway, look, let's give the connection to Trump though, because other stuff happens. Spirituality, turning the path of the nation, blah, blah, blah. So Carson eventually drops out of his presidential run after only briefly leading the field. And other than that, it was all Trump. So Carson told Donald Trump about Mike Lindell, who then gets invited to meet Donald Trump. The day before the meeting, Lindell donated $2,700 to Trump's campaign, $17,300 to the Republican National Committee, and $20,000 to Trump Victory. That's before meeting Donald Trump. He's already ponying up a BMW effectively in campaign donations. And look, this is not a coincidence. There's a source that Larson has. It says, if you can convince him, oh, we're doing this amazing work, he might just be the kind of guy that gives you $10 million. Or he might be the kind of guy that puts you on his charitable foundation board and gives you a salary. And indeed, that's actually what ended up happening. Perhaps we can go into those details in a bit. But yes, the money started to flow. The jobs on board started to flow. I don't know if there was a spiritual reawakening, but the money side of the equation certainly seems to have worked out for the family.
Yeah, I keep going back to, look, it's a free country. So if they're right wingers and they want to collaborate, and Mike Lindell's evangelical Christian, these guys are evangelical Christians, and he puts his money behind that. Funny enough, God bless, right? it is what it is, and of course they can do that, right? But that's part of the amazing part of the story. Mike Lindell does not start as an evangelical Christian at all before he meets the family. So we have this impression of Lindell from the Trump years where he's already a religious radical, but he was not. They take this super impressionable guy who has had addiction problems in the past. I mentioned that in light of a couple of things. And at that point he had a foundation and it was to help people with addiction problems, right?
That sounds good.
And I'm not saying that the guy's a good guy in any way, shape or form. I mean, you see, I mean, he calls our reporters lying scumbags and says they're going to jail. And here I am saying he has a certain childlike innocence. But he's got a foundation that it makes sense and is trying to help people, I guess, in his own way. And of course, as soon as the family people come in, they redirect it. And then he starts going to evangelical causes instead. Hey, who does evangelical causes? The family does. Now, let's talk about how nefarious it is. Because yeah, the right wingers who are rich are looking for tax cuts, deregulation, don't fight climate change because we're in the fracking business, etc. They have very specific economic agenda. In this case, the family has a very right wing evangelical agenda, not just in America, but across the world. So in previous cases, and Jonathan's got amazing information about the family. You should read all of his stories. We'll put the links down below. Jump around, look at them, because the whole thing gives you a sense of exactly how right wing works. So they then send people to places like Uganda, where they're helped to try to pass a law that executes gay people. Now remember, Democrats participate in the prayer breakfast. That's the thing that gives them all the power, because their leaders get to put up pictures with Barack Obama and the Clintons and Chris Coons and all these people. And they give them credibility and validity. And they go, oh, you see that? And then they use it a lot of times against LGBTQ folks. That's the primary target. Yep. But in other awful instances as well. And when they see a guy, honestly, a sucker like Lindell, they think, oh, you don't want to help people with addiction issues. No, 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 no. You want to give us that money and we'll use it against gay people. And that's the very nefarious part of this from my perspective.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people liken the family, especially recently, to Sharia law, which I think is absurd. Like, this isn't Sharia law, this is Christian fundamentalism. Like, that's what they're doing. It's not, you don't have to compare it to something that's not happening here in the United States. This is something very real that is happening here. It's Christian fundamentalism. And they're using people like Lindell, who, you know, he seems useful, but he's definitely an idiot. But to further their deeply unpopular policy goals, you know, things like anti-abortion initiatives, abortions, like 70% of the American people support abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, a majority of the American people support gay marriage. But, you know, they're able to do this from the shadows using people like him. And it's just horrific. And the Democrats going to the prayer breakfast is disgusting. Joe Biden went just this last February. And I'm sorry, but Joe Biden, who has been in politics, particularly he was in Congress forever, knows about the family. He knows what their goals are. He knows what they're doing behind the scenes. I mean, hell, you just need a Netflix subscription to know more about the family now. So with that knowledge, how could they continue to participate in it? It is beyond me.
By the way, what I love is when we, the reporting that we do, the objective reporting that TYT Investigates does, then leads to actual change. Because then when we took this reporting to several progressive members of Congress that were unwittingly attending the event thinking, oh, it's to promote a religion of all sorts, right? And that's the marketing that they put out there. And you show them what they actually do. They go, oh, no, I don't want any piece of this. And they've backed out, right? Now, conservative Democrats, establishment Democrats have not at all backed out. And you should ask them, why are you still attending this thing that leads to significant harm to a lot of members of our community and to people in general, and helping them do the marketing? When they go, whether it's in America or in other countries, with this aura of they know super powerful people, it gives them enough power to be able to push and win in those countries. Because people think, oh my God, who do they have behind them? Is it Biden? Is it Trump? Is it both? My God, I gotta listen to these guys if I want anything out of America.
Yeah.
And so that's a terrible phenomenon. And Mike Lindell getting roped in by these guys ironically puts a spotlight on them, which maybe can begin to clear up this issue and have Democrats stop giving these guys legitimacy.
Agreed. Well, we should probably take our first break. Lots more news to get to after this.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk, John, and Ravana with you guys. John read me a comment right before we came back saying, Cenk usually has energy, but he's got extra energy today from one of our viewers. That's actually true, and part of that happens, and this happens quite regularly, when I drink the too strong coffee right before and during the show, and that's exactly what I'm doing right now. No joke, that's actually why. So toostrongcoffee.com/TYT, and you'll be just like me. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. That'll dissuade everybody from drinking it. No, seriously, guys, it's delicious and it's great. It gives money to progressive causes, including women's causes, because Women's Equality Day, 18% off for you guys and 18% to women's causes. Toostrongcoffee.com/TYT. I'd roll.
Well, that actually reminds me, we didn't give Jonathan Larson credit. He actually found out at least half of Mike Lindell's excess energy comes from Too Strong Coffee.
The other half, something else.
But
you're gonna ruin
half
our
is
marketing.
Too Strong. He just likes it. Like, he doesn't like progressives, but he can't deny the coffee. Anyway.
And then he gets like mad at himself that he likes it because the money goes to progressive causes when you buy it. And then he's like, you're going to jail, Too Strong. That's what's happening to you.
Okay, God, give me some more. Oh my God. Okay. With that said, let's talk about the cops, okay. I guess. Vermont police are looking for a violent serial offender that at one point they actually managed to pull over, but then let drive away because they were too scared to deal with him, which I've never heard of this before, but it actually happened. So this is Matthew Cagle, a 33-year-old, was wanted by Burlington police for slapping a construction worker and threatening to stab him. The worker was a flagger who was who had tried to direct Cagle's car along with other traffic. So Cagle drove to a supermarket, then drove back to the construction workers, slapping the flagger, threatening to punch a different construction worker. He was wielding a hunting knife, the police said, and threatening to stab both of the workers. If you don't already have a crystal clear idea of what this guy looks like, here is a picture for you. And it's exactly what you would have expected. Soon after those incidents, he drove by the same stop, seemingly returning to the scene of his multiple crimes, and was pulled over by the cops. But he soon drove away and the cops didn't chase him, saying Cagle refused to exit his vehicle after being told multiple times he was under arrest. Officers did not pursue Cagle due to his unpredictable and violent history.
I would think that would be the reason to pursue him as opposed to letting him go.
Yeah. They were weighing different options. Now he does have a long history of at least 24 encounters with police officers. And apparently you can just do that. And you'll just keep going if you're in Vermont. Let's see, he had a number of convictions, including felony charges, multiple offenses for violating court orders for parole. He was also listed by police as threatening another person with a sledgehammer in July. So doesn't have a favorite weapon, he'll use whatever's around. Accused of punching and kicking a man several times, leaving him unconscious in Battery Park.
Jesus.
After his arrest, the police began investigating the incident as a hate crime. They say Cagle has displayed many violent tendencies towards other members of the public in recent months, causing some to not comply with investigations due to fear of retaliation. Get him off the streets, what are you doing? Who else is allowed to do one of these things, let alone over and over and over again? This is like a character from a bad TV show.
Yeah, as Cagle's doing his exercises all across town, they're not getting him at all. It's unbelievable. So guys, look, now let's turn serious here because there's a number of important issues that this reveals. First of all, I'm not sure I've ever seen a case of white privilege this extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remind you that Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy in Cleveland, was shot in 2 seconds. He had a toy gun. Police did not ask him if it was a toy. They didn't ask him anything. They just drove straight up to him and shot him and killed him. And that happens all the time. And yes, of course, Tamir was black. And so we've shown you about half a dozen times where police have, the ones that are on video, police shooting African Americans who are unarmed and running away. And what is that excuse they use? Well, they were kind of a danger to the community at large. Does this guy look like he might be a danger to the community at large? I mean, I'm not sure I've ever heard of a case of a guy who's more clearly a danger to the community at large. Mm-hmm. Sledgehammers, knives, all these different weapons. The guy's probably got a crossbow. And the cops are like, he's so dangerous, we don't want to try to apprehend him.
What is he, Batman?
Or the Joker, or what? Like, this is insane. And so black folks get shot in the back when they don't have weapons. This guy doesn't even get arrested because he has too many weapons. I'm gonna give a slight caveat here. Maybe what Vermont is doing is saying, hey, you know, we do too many chases and that endangers the public more.
Sure.
And there's a better way to bring this guy in. If they do that uniformly for everybody, okay. In this case, it seems a bit extreme. You really got to take this guy in pretty much immediately, right? But maybe it's justifiable if you can show me that it's consistent. But nationwide, it is not anywhere near consistent. It's totally apples and oranges. And it's how can you be an African American in this country and not get incredibly frustrated as you're giving speeches to your kids? Now remember, if it's a police officer, don't even smile at him the wrong way. You know, don't do this, don't do that, don't put your hands up, don't put them down, don't put them in your pockets. Meanwhile, this guy's chopping people to pieces all over town and they won't even arrest them. Why hasn't this guy been in jail already? Why doesn't he have a 20-year jail sentence? I just don't get it. Rayvana.
Yeah, I mean, the entire time I was reading this story, just ACAB was going over and over in my head because it's so absurd. The police the reasons they listed they didn't want to arrest him are the exact reasons why he should be arrested. You know, they're saying, oh, we can't detain him because he has a history of violence and being unpredictable. So instead, we'll just let him loose in Vermont to do violence unpredictably. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely mind-boggling, but you know, and what you were getting at, Cenk, the story really shows is the massive disparity in the way that Black and brown people are treated by police versus white people are treated by police. Because usually when we're hearing police talk about how they were afraid for their lives because of a suspect, it's after the fact and they're saying that to justify them murdering them if the suspect was Black or brown. But here the police are using their fear as a means to justify them doing nothing. So it just seems like maybe all of those police that shot, you know, Black and brown people for just existing didn't have to do that. Didn't have to be one afraid for their life, but definitely didn't have to do that. And I'm sick and tired of hearing them justify their actions. It's just a system that is ingrained in white supremacy.
So look, I remember so many of the cases where Black men in this country were unjustly killed by cops. But Eric Garner jumped to mind because they said, well, not at that time, but at an earlier time, he was selling loose cigarettes. So loose cigarettes will get you killed if you're a Black man, but chopping people up doesn't even get you arrested if you're white. And so I'm hoping this isn't uniform, but honestly, in today's show alone, we have several stories of white people committing crimes, threatening crimes, over the top crimes, and nobody ever does anything about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe, I don't know, I'm not white, and I suspect if you're poor and white, this has not really been your experience. The cops are probably happy to arrest you as well, right? But I don't know, maybe if you're middle class and upper class white, you've known all along that the law doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
And that you never get arrested. I mean, I'm just stunned by it. As a person who isn't white, I'm like, is that how they live? You know that old skit they had, I think it might have been Chappelle, where he goes around as a white guy and then everybody's like, hey, welcome, how are you, and et cetera. Maybe you could add to that, you know, he goes around like stabbing people. They're like, ah, it's okay, it's fine, right?
It'll
and guys, remember,
season.
Again, across all races, and you could all relate to this, guys are sitting in jail for smoking marijuana for a long, long time. There's one guy in I think, the Northwest who's got a life sentence, right? Meanwhile, this guy's going around with every weapon you can imagine, mm-hmm. and actually hitting people and hurting them significantly. And they're like, nope, no jail time at all. Just walk around, do as you like.
Exactly.
Unreal.
Yeah, and so look, as of right now, they still haven't found the guy. I've been like looking all day to see if they'll eventually get him, but they haven't. And they tell people not to approach him, which, I mean, why should you have to if the cops won't even approach him? That seems unfair to expect you to. And yeah, look, it is possible that they have turned over a new leaf and they just don't want to use any more violence than is necessary. But we've never seen any evidence that would give us reason to extend goodwill towards any cops anywhere, basically. So I'm not gonna believe that, especially when a casual Google for Burlington, Vermont police brutality brings up tons of hits. So they know how to use violence when they want to. And I would love for cops to not do that, but as Cenk said, we'll see how this is doled out and to whom and who not to.
Yeah, one of our members, Emanimal, just wrote in. It was Eddie Murphy on SNL. I wasn't sure if it was him or Chappelle. Thank you for pointing that out. I love doing this show with the members, tyt.com/join. Last thing, guys, if they say this guy was too dangerous to arrest, well, what does that tell you about all the guys that they shot and killed? Apparently, they weren't too dangerous to engage in, but they were shot and killed anyway. But a guy who's actually dangerous, hands off. So that's also very telling.
Yeah.
I just really quick want to know, if you live in Vermont and you see this man, are you supposed to call 911? Are the police gonna come and high five him? Like, are they actually gonna come apprehend him if you see him? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, and all right, fine. We'll end on a funny note from one of our members as well. I am Sock wrote in, you'd think a guy named Kegels would have more control.
I guess it's Friday. I'll allow it.
I made the exercise joke earlier. I don't know if anybody got it.
No, we did. Twitch recognized it anyway. Okay. Right. Speaking of other people with violence in their heart getting away with it, let's jump right into this video.
Here we go into Mesquite. Confront this administration. Breaking multiple state laws. Causing major disturbance to a family. I think we broke this way. So we're going to confront them. Tell them they're breaking the law. And if they don't comply with the law, we're going to call the sheriff and ask for them to be arrested. If necessary, we'll do a citizen's arrest. Because these people who are supposed to be public servants can't just take the law into their own hands and think that they can just step all over criminal rights. The Attorney General made it quite clear, as did the governor, that you can't quarantine healthy children. That's denying them an education. It's creating fear. It's imposing on the lives of parents who have to work. I'll show you what Frank's holding here.
My girlfriend might be on my numbers.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Here, I'll show you. Law enforcement zip ties.
Okay, so it's about schools and it's about masks. So sure, why not go zip tie someone who works at a school? The person filming that and desperately trying to get someone else's face on camera, but unsuccessfully, is Kelly Walker, who owns a coffee shop called Viva Coffee in Tucson. So that was his live stream of this. Specifically, it was live streamed on his business's Instagram account, which seems like that's not what it's for. But anyway, what basically happened was Walker was contacted by the father of a kid who goes to the school. Notably, Walker doesn't have any kids that go to that school. That seems like it would be a stumbling block for him assaulting someone who works there, but it's not. And so they needed to quarantine this child. The father didn't like that. So combined with Walker, they decided to go and harangue the people working there, which they did. At one point, Walker claims in the extended video, "I am a scientist who wrote about COVID for doctors and dentists all over the country." There's no evidence to show that Walker is a scientist, though he has made this claim several times on his own Facebook page, so I guess it's probably true. And eventually the cops were called. They were allowed to leave, and the cops don't yet know if they're going to be pressing charges. I guess you can threaten to detain, possibly kidnap someone with zip ties for a live audience and get away with it.
Here we go again, white right-wing privilege. Imagine if a Muslim man said, "I don't like what this Republican is doing over there. I brought some zip ties and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna do a citizen's arrest and I'm gonna hog tie them." By the way, it's a woman that he's talking about. "And I'll kidnap that woman and I'll tie her up." And the cops are like, "Well, I don't know. Should we do something or should we not do something?" No, they'd be on his ass instantly. He had zip ties, seemed kind of dangerous. That's why we shot him in the head, just to make sure, right? This guy walking around and he says in some of the videos, he's like, "I'll go to prison for this." You know why he says that? Because he knows he ain't going to prison. If he thought he was going to get a 5-year sentence, do you think he'd be going, "I'll go to prison, I don't care"? No, all of a sudden he'd be like his buddy, "Don't put me on camera. We're going to do something deeply illegal. Don't put me on camera." Okay? So but the guy filming, the guy who did this whole thing, he knows something that his friend doesn't. If you're a white right winger, the cops are never ever going to hold you accountable. You can admit crimes on tape. You can go to by the way, threatening to do physical harm is also assault and is also illegal. But in America, apparently, if you're white and you're right wing, you almost never get arrested. You can admit crimes on television, on video, and the cops are like, "Oh, no, no, you're free. You like Trump? Oh, you're free to go. No, it's okay. No consequences at all." And I like the irony too of him saying, "You know, these school administrators can't take the law into their own hands, okay? So guys, we're gonna go do a citizen's arrest where we take the law into our own hands." Because logic not required. It just anger, emotions, fear, hatred, all aided and abetted by the authorities.
Sorry, I actually have to live stream myself doing some crime right now from my official work account. Just everything about this story just proves to me that we are living in the absolute dumbest timeline imaginable. But what really got me is the fact that he called himself just a general scientist, no area of expertise. He's just a man of science and that he's been writing about COVID for both doctors and dentists.
Oh yeah, that's hilarious.
I have questions about COVID-19 and, you know, pandemics in general. The first person I will turn to is my dentist.
No, that's, well, Ravana, you're so right. And wrong. So the thing you're right about is, I love that this guy's like, no, I'm a scientist for dentists. And people are like, oh, then it's okay. Then it's okay. Zip tie anyone you like. Right? And then, but you are wrong. If you admit the crimes on camera, you forgot you have to be white and a right winger. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a right winger, then you're obviously Antifa / Black Lives Matter. And so you will be arrested. Be careful out there.
Yeah.
Okay. And guys, you know, all kidding aside, John, I want to kick it to you. Like, if that was your mom or wife or daughter or whatever, and the guy's like going to threaten to do serious damage to her, by the way, remember, because she's trying to protect the health of the kids in the school, how furious would you be that the authorities are like, we'll take it under advisement? I mean, maybe he comes back and really, really hurts her, but we're not sure yet. I mean, he committed crimes on tape. But we're not sure because, hey, he's one of us. So we might not do anything if he harms your family. And by the way, the kid that they pulled out of school was sitting next to a kid who had COVID. So what do you want him to go back into school and expose everybody else and endanger their health and lives? And the right wingers go, yeah. Oh, well, now we don't get to endanger our lives. Mm-hmm. Where's my freaking freedom? Then I'm going to endanger your life because you won't let me endanger your life. And we have debates with these guys.
Yeah.
As if they're legitimate people. And Ravana, I forgot, it could be other timelines. Damn it, we got caught in the wrong one.
That's true. And if you're trying to get an idea of how far this guy is willing to go, well, in late August, he compared government mask mandates and vaccine guidance in a post to the Holocaust in Germany, the Warsaw Ghetto genocide, the murder of millions of Russians and Chinese under communist regimes, the killing fields of Cambodia, which obviously is going a bit far, I think. But I like that he acknowledges that there have been other massacres, other genocides. He at least is well read in that respect. But anyway, yeah, he says in the video he's willing to go to prison. I think he's more focused on how he's probably going to end up going to Tucker Carlson as a result of this, if I had to guess.
Yeah, there's no law in this country. And the, ironically, the Republican Party that billed itself as a party of law and order and the rule of law now consistently has people going around saying, we're not going to listen to any stinking laws. Laws are for minorities. All we care about is power. We don't care about justice. We will use that power for our own sake and to endanger you people. And there's nothing you could do about it because the cops treat us like we're golden entities, not to be touched under any circumstances. Yeah. It's sickening. We should have actual justice in this country.
Well, I think it's time for our second break, but a few more stories coming up after this.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk, John, and Ravana with you guys. I was just amused that a person with a handle of Las Vegas joined by hitting the join button below on YouTube just now. So that's it. Sin City is part of the Young Turks. Yeah, I don't see how we could lose. So I love it. All right, John.
Nice. So right now, as we're waiting to find out exactly what's going to be in the reconciliation infrastructure bill, we have natural disasters hitting multiple different parts of the United States. Fires in the West, tropical storms and massive flooding in the South and the Northeast. And so when you combine both of those things, what do you get? You might think an opportunity to finally take climate change seriously and understand its connection to infrastructure. But no, what you get is Joe Manchin, who I guess has been lonely as the news has been focusing on these disasters and on Afghanistan, and now he wants some attention. And so this Wednesday, he was at an event hosted by the US Chamber of Commerce, and he said, let's sit back, let's see what happens. We have so much on our plate. And I wish he was talking about food, but no, he's talking about the reconciliation bill. Because earlier today, he released an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying a pause is warranted because it will provide more clarity on the trajectory of the pandemic, and it will allow us to determine whether inflation is transitory or not. While some have suggested this reconciliation legislation must be passed now, I believe that making budgetary decisions under artificial political deadlines never leads to good policy or sound decisions. I have always said if I can't explain it, I can't vote for it, and I can't explain why my Democratic colleagues are rushing to spend $3.5 trillion. And so he says, for now, thanks to inflation and debt and blah, 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 he can't support the thing that he's already supported. And indeed, months and months ago, called for even more spending, saying there should be $4 trillion in infrastructure. But now, as you know, dozens of people just died of flooding in New York and New Jersey, he thinks it's time for a pause.
Okay, so one of the blah, blah, blahs, John, was Afghanistan. He's like, oh, COVID, and another reason I can't do it is Afghanistan. Wait, what does that have to do with infrastructure in America? In fact, if it has anything to do with it, you would think, well, we're out of Afghanistan, good, we can save a lot of money and spend that over here. Instead of trying to do nation building in Afghanistan, we could do nation building here in America. And he's like, no, that's why we shouldn't do it here.
Yep.
They're not even trying to make sense. They're just throwing stuff up against the wall. Then he says, these artificial deadlines, they don't make any sense. I'm not gonna operate under artificial deadlines. At the same time, he is pressuring Biden administration, Schumer and Pelosi and saying, you have to pass my infrastructure bill that I did with the Republicans, and you've gotta pass it right now. I can't wait. I don't wanna do the $3.5 trillion one at the same time. It's gonna take too long. You have to pass mine. You have to get my artificial deadline in. I'm not kidding, guys. Yep. That's actually his position. It's not even hyperbole. So these guys lie for a living, and like over the top, easily provable lies within the same paragraph, right? And so why do they do it when it's so brazen? Because they don't watch online videos, they don't go on the internet. They only get their news from mainstream media. And unfortunately, a lot of their voters get it from mainstream media. And they know mainstream media is never going to point out that a politician is a liar. They love Joe Manchin. I mean, they've made him a hero. They're like, what is Joe Manchin going to say? Joe Manchin, oh, you represent all the moderates in America. You know, all these radical left. And by the way, radical right, the mainstream media will say. But Joe Manchin, who got out of a Chamber of Commerce event where he was literally taking legalized bribes.
Yep.
Chamber of Commerce is the main business group in America, a lobbying group for business. And they give checks to politicians, which we don't call bribes anymore. We call them campaign contributions. And the press never says it. Never says, hey, this guy just took a whole bunch of bribes and now he's coming in here with this horse crap. They say, oh, the moderate Joe Manchin is making brilliant points here about how the progressives are rushing things through. That's why we have to rush through the moderate version instead. So the press is who's screwing you. Yeah. Manchin's just a tool.
Ravana?
Yeah, I just want to ask Joe Manchin, when did deficit hawking, you know, come back in vogue? Like that hasn't been a thing since before I was born. People don't care about the deficit and debt. What are you talking about? I also think it's deeply embarrassing for him as a sitting United States Senator to put out a statement saying he doesn't understand the infrastructure bill. That's your job. You should be able to understand it and you should be able to explain it. And you know, maybe if you spend a little less time sitting down with the executives over at Exxon and a little more time paying attention to your actual job and the wants and needs of your constituents, you know, the people who actually are able to vote for you and not just the people who are funneling, you know, millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars into your campaign, then maybe you would actually know what's going on. Maybe you should just sit down, shut up and listen a little bit, Joe Manchin.
I think that would be a great start. Well, we're obviously frustrated with him and we're pointing out the influence of money on all of this. Well, some of his Democratic colleagues are as well. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, Manchin has weekly huddles with Exxon and is one of many senators who gives lobbyists their pen to write so-called bipartisan fossil fuel bills. It's killing people, our people, at least 12 last night, sick of this bipartisan corruption that masquerades as clear-eyed moderation. So that's pretty strong. She calls out the specific lobbyists he talks to, says that he's just giving over his power to them, and then basically blames him for the death of her constituents. So that's in the House. Bernie Sanders responded to Manchin saying, "Rebuilding our crumbling physical infrastructure, roads, bridges, water systems is important. Rebuilding our crumbling human infrastructure, healthcare, education, climate change is more important. No infrastructure bill without the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill," which AOC also said, you know, you want to destroy one side, we're perfectly happy to destroy the other. And there's been others as well. Pramila Jayapal and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar had great commentary too. But thankfully, they're not backing down from Manchin and his threats. Yeah. But I have a question for you. What do you think his goal is out of this? What is he trying to achieve? Complete destruction of it? A paring back of it? More pork for West Virginia out of it? What do you think?
Oh, I know exactly what he's trying to do. So, number one, he did this after the COVID relief bill, right after he killed minimum wage, he went to National Restaurant Association and so did cinema, and they collected bribes. And so then the question isn't why is Manchin acting like this? The question is why does the Chamber of Commerce want to kill the $3.5 trillion bill and pass the bipartisan bill? Because the bipartisan bill is structured to give away as much money as possible to private corporations. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge urgent matter for them that requires an artificial deadline. The other one lowers Medicare age. Well, that hurts the pharmaceutical companies, the health insurance companies most of all. So I can go down the list of the different things where companies are not in favor of the $3.5 trillion one. And they go, and that money's reserved for our tax cuts. So don't you dare give it to average Americans. So Manchin is just an order taker. They're like, here, boy, come here. Take your orders now and take your checks. Now you go do as you're told. And then he goes, he's not even that bright. That's why he'll say things that are an obvious contradiction in the same paragraph. Mm-hmm. Because he's not paid to be smart or a leader. He's paid to just do as he's told. And that describes almost all the politicians. And by the way, you guys all know that. No matter where you are in the political spectrum, if you're watching this, you know what I'm saying about that is true. And you would apply to Democrats, Republicans, etc. The only people who don't know that is the mainstream media. They're like, Manchin's an, like they would be literally, every reporter in Washington would be nuclear level outraged at what I'm saying now. They're like, he besmirched the reputation of Joe Manchin. And they would attack me and not Manchin. So that's how awful our press is. And but look, I don't want to gloss over how important the statements of the progressives, including AOC, were. I mean, AOC pointed out that Manchin, a fellow Democrat, actually cares about lobbyists more than the voters, mentioned ExxonMobil, how he's taking orders from them. That is unprecedented, hasn't happened in decades in Washington. And the Democratic leadership had been pressuring progressives from the minute that AOC and the others won. Don't you ever, that's their golden rule. Never, ever criticize a fellow Democrat. Yeah. And they're breaking the golden rule. And that is incredibly courageous and can lead to change. She even used the word corruption, unprecedented, okay? And so, and of course the dummies in the alt left are like, no, it's all their fault. All they're doing is tweeting. No, you schmucks. They're saying we're gonna withhold our vote. That's what Bernie's saying. That's what AOC is saying. When they're not doing the right thing, you critique. When they are doing the right thing, you go, great, we're happy about that. You don't go, I'm gonna come to your house and endanger your life. Because you don't understand politics. So this is Jamal Bowman, AOC, Pramila Jayapal, who I have critiqued several times before, doing the right thing and saying, no, you're not getting our vote. You're not getting our vote on that bipartisan bill until you do the $3.5 trillion bill. That's progressives fighting back, and that's awesome and should be celebrated.
Cenk, I think what you failed to consider though is that every time some Twitter account that was made last month tweets hashtag fraud squad, that actually gets us a lot closer to the infrastructure deal than people in Congress actually getting us the infrastructure deal.
Yes.
But jokes aside, I'm really happy to see the progressive levying their power here, you know, the power that they have as far as this vote goes. But what really sort of gets me down is that they're not, you know, coming from the same position as the Blue Dog Dems, as the Joe Manchin conservative Democrats withholding their vote. Because at the end of the day, the Joe Manchins, if nothing happens, if there's no infrastructure deal, even the bipartisan one, there's no skin off their back. Like it's okay. But the progressives want something, they want to see something pass. you know, at the end of the day. They do want to see a change because we need you know, this money for infrastructure. We need the spending. We need these repairs. And they actually give a crap about their constituents. They care about you know, helping the American people in a way that the Joe Manchins don't. So they're not arguing from, you know, the same position of strength, which sucks, but it is good to see them levying the power that they do have and standing up to them, particularly Joe Manchin.
Yeah, and by the way, I call them alt-left, the fraud squad clowns and stuff. I started blocking them, and every time I block, I go to check their timeline. About 70% of them follow and retweet alt-right guys. They actually are alt-right. They're pretending to be left-wing to try to rip us apart. So understand those clowns. Anyway, they're totally irrelevant at this point. So we'll stop talking about them very, very soon. They're just stupid and loud. All right, last thing is Joe Manchin saying, I can't even explain what's in this bill. Ties go in, ties go out. You can't explain that. You're a United States Senator. Isn't it your job to know what's in the bill?
It's embarrassing.
I mean, and so he says that in the media. It's like, oh, bravo, bravo. Joe Manchin doesn't understand the bill. He's such a wonderful moderate. Everybody should do what Joe Manchin says. He's a moderate. He's so great. He's the reasonable one. The schmuck just told you he doesn't even know what the hell's in it. He didn't bother looking.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it reminds me of Nancy Pelosi with her green dream or whatever. It's like they delight in their own feigned ignorance about these things. Because there's no harm to it. They don't like if they don't know what's going on and these things that so many people support that are finally getting representation in Congress. There's no write-ups about how Nancy Pelosi is losing it and has no idea what her party's about anymore. She mocks the progressives and the media is like, yes, that's great. I hate them too. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Anyway, looks like we're about out of time.
Let's squeeze it in. Come on, let's try.
I thought that you might want to.
I know. Let's make it quick. Let's do it.
Jim Jordan is apparently going around telling people that Donald Trump is about to launch his run for the presidency. Now, this has been reported, but in response to reporters saying he's doing this, particularly in Ohio, a spokesperson for Representative Jim Jordan has denied it, saying, "Not true. Mr. Jordan did not say this." And it's like, ah, if only we had video. But we do, thanks to reporter Lauren Windsor, who had a little talk with Jim Jordan, which you'll see here.
He's gonna run again.
You think so?
I talked to him yesterday. He's not ready to announce after all this craziness in Afghanistan.
Thank God. My friend.
He said he's really bad. Thank you for coming.
So the woman you saw in the video is Lauren Windsor, the host and head of Undercurrent, continuing to do a great job of posing as a conservative woman. And these guys just fall for it. Ron Johnson last week, Jim Jordan today. I don't know, is it gonna be Louis Gohmert, Matt Gaetz? Oh, please go talk to Matt Gaetz, Lauren Windsor. Imagine what you can get him to admit on camera.
Oh yeah.
No, stay away from him. You're a woman, don't go near Matt.
That's also true.
Very good point, Rayvon. All right.
Well, she's not 16 though, so I think that she's gonna be just fine.
So look, again, Lauren Windsor doing a terrific job. She, Undercurrent was when, partly because we used to work with her at Current TV. So it turns out people who used to work with the Young Turks can actually go on to do wonderful things.
Okay,
anyway, she's doing amazing reporting, and it's amazing that they haven't caught on. They're just like, woman, American flag hat, me tell you everything. Okay. So, but let's focus on what the news story is. The news story is Trump apparently is going to announce imminently that he is going to run in 2024. In a sense, it's a very large story because that knocks out all the talk of DeSantis and all the other people who are thinking of running,
Tucker.
but who will all bow down to Donald Trump and lick his boots also imminently as soon as he announces it, because you can't oppose the Don. But in a sense, is it that big a story? Because did anybody think he wasn't going to run in 2024? He's a little bit shy, and you know, once bitten, no.
Well, he's got a lot of new hobbies. And he's really enjoying them. He feels like he's reconnected with his family. He's starting to remember some of their names. Like, does he really want to break that off for wasting time in politics? Come on.
He's got a lot of weddings and funerals to attend where he can talk about himself.
That he's not invited to, but he shows up at.
So you got the Jason Miller part of this story?
Yes, so Jason Miller said, I would say somewhere between 99 and 100%. I think he's definitely running in 2024. And Miller said he had just spoken with Trump a day earlier, noting that the former president has not said the magical words to me. Stating that he'll run again, but he added that talking to Trump for only a few minutes makes it pretty clear that he's running. So look, and we talked, Brett Ehrlich and I talked about this on the Damage Report this morning. It could be that they're just giving us information and in fact they're talking to Trump. It's likely that they are, but it also kind of reeks of both Jason Miller and Jim Jordan wanting you to know that they're talking to Trump. Oh, he loves talking to me. We chat every once in a while, 100%. Sometimes during insurrections, but definitely we talk. I'm great and cool. Talk to me too. That's what it feels like.
Definitely, no question, Rayvana.
Yeah, I also love the language that Jason Miller used, magical words. Just like the thought of Trump whispering whatever magical words are in his ear is very funny. But I mean, I don't. You know, doubt that Jim Jordan talked to Trump about this. You know, we know he talks to him a lot, you know, even on January 6th during ongoing insurrections. But, you know, and Trump running is not a big surprise. He's egotistic. He loves himself. He wants to get his power back. He wants to get his status back. I don't know if he wants that more than he wants to get his Twitter account back, but either way, what this story like really has made me sit and think about is what the DNC response will be to a Trump 2024 run, because they can't use the same you know things the same moves they did in 2020. It's a lot harder to sort of, you know, a lot of people or most people who voted for Joe Biden weren't really voting for him. They were voting against Trump, and that's not really a great strategy after 4 years of a Democratic president. Yeah. You know, it was a lot easier to, you know, scare people into the polls while Trump was still in office. But unfortunately, Americans have extremely short memories. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really hope that they don't just fall back to that playbook. And I think what they really need to do is start passing legislation in Congress. Joe Biden needs to start signing executive orders that will, you know, actually improve the lives of Americans in a material way. And that has to happen. That change has to be, you know, real and something that they can see before the 2024 election. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think Trump will win. I hope with all my heart he doesn't. But, you know, it's really the ball is in the Democrats' court to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay, so last couple of things here. I'm with Rayvana. I'm glad that they have safe words when they're playing together. I don't want to know what they are.
On Twitch, Dissident PM guessed that the magic words are massive dumps.
I was going to guess covfefe. Maybe that's what covfefe is. It's a safe word. And Jason finally takes the thing out of his mouth. All right, so the ball, is that what they would gag?
Okay, thank you. I mean, not thank you, but thank you.
Okay.
Take it.
Well, if he's a spokesperson, which he was for Trump, at some point you got to take the gag out. So, Corvert. Rob in our member section wrote in a personality cult, status is connected to proximity to the object of the cult.
Yes.
Rob, great point. Smartest audience in the world. Okay. And then finally, look, guys, I think that they were going to tease people with the run for longer. My guess as to why they're starting to go now, which is very early, is because he'll then claim, I'm running for president. That's why they're doing these criminal actions against me. Remember, his chief financial officer has been arrested for the Trump organization, and they're putting a ton of pressure on Weisselberg.
Sure.
And if Weisselberg flips, Trump is next. And then he wants to be running for president first when they indict him, and he goes, oh, now it's political. And so that might be part of the calculus here.
I think it gives him more influence directly in 2022 as well. And he'd probably prefer to run and stop others from really exploring it or starting to generate more attention. And like he's seeing all this stuff about Ron DeSantis, Republicans really like him. He doesn't want to wait another year and a half to announce that he's definitely running when Ron DeSantis might be even bigger as a threat.
And oh, John, that's such a great point. And remind me of one other thing. There was a story out, in fact, a couple of days ago about how some of the Republican donors are getting sick of Trump and they're starting to give money to other Republicans who might think of running for president. Trump might have seen that and go, oh, no. Mm-hmm. I want all the money.
Totally.
So if I go in, DeSantis and everybody else bows and then says Covfefe, and then I get all their money. And so that's why there is some actual reasons to go earlier like they are now,
yeah,
and why this story is important.
Yeah.
All right, everybody check out Ravana's show, twitch.tv/TYT. Everybody check out the damage report. And when we come back, J.R. Jackson and Brett Ehrlich join me. Two more stories of Republicans saying we're not gonna follow the law. And we might even bust out people in jail, as long as they're right wingers. We'll break any law we need to. It's amazing. So come right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.